a big head here today. And I think it's a full house. I think you like, you love the conversation. That's why you hear your numbers. But I think today you are going to get it from this comment now. But welcome here, and we are grateful that you are here. Also, also welcome to the members. Thank you for being here inside. Also, everyone in the room. I'm Ellen Prins. I'm the chairperson of this committee, and I'm representing the residences. And I'm going to allow everyone in the room to introduce themselves. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, colleagues, and Dr. Ngubane and Eskom. My name is Ntomuhle Khawula, a member of the NCOP representing the Kingdom of KwaZulu Natal.
Dumela mbagaetsho. Nna ke bidiwa Olifile Sefako, go tswa Bokone Bophirima. Ke a leboga.
Good morning, I'm Kathy Labuskagne and I'm representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Lennox Keeler and I'm representing the Eastern Cape.
Morning, my name is Jomo Nyambi. I'm representing Mpumalanga province.
Good morning, my name is Omi Singh. I'm happy that we've got another member from the Kingdom of KwaZulu-Natal. Meeting. I'm from also from the same.
Over to
my name is Zupiswa Nuita. I'm representing
so, introduce.
Brian Molefe, Group Chief Executive, ASCO.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Anor Singh, Group Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Abraham Masamo, Group Executive for Group Capital.
Good morning. My name is Monge Zinsokolo, Group Executive Distribution Eskom.
Good morning. My name is Johnny Zaza, Chief Executive Eskom Enterprises.
Good morning. My name is Pal Martins, also Eskom.
Good morning, I'm Elsie Pule, Group Executive, Human Resources.
Sean Merritt, Group Executive, IT.
Please come.
Good morning, my name is Donald Gagnon, Department of Public and
Department. My name is Fred Indo, from ESCO.
I'm Peter Conroy from ESCO.
For the chair of Thais Waller, also from ESCO.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Kosana from the Department of Public Enterprise.
Mapelo Mpunela, ESCO.
No.
There's other people.
No. We still have reliable resources.
This one. Can you please introduce your voice?
Good morning. I'm Noctula Mdoma, Office of the Audit General.
Good morning. I'm Luan Ampros from Media 24.
Good morning. I'm Wayne with PMG.
Good morning. I'm Nico Taipa from 24. Good morning. I'm the Focus with Dad.
Morning, Toza Miller from SABC.
Who else? Can I give over to the supporting staff? Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Isaac Bauer. I'm the committee secretary. Standing in for Mr. BC. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Beverly Soga. I'm the secretary to the chairperson.
Balance Milan Harris, I shall record.
Amanda Zinda, I'm going to take the stage.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think without saying anything, as you could hear that there is a big interest in this meeting, and we know why. And we are going to give you opportunity to present the report, and I hope that even this report will give a positive message outside, not only the negative side. Before giving over to you, I want to deal with the apologies. I received a standing apology from the minister. Wednesday, she cannot attend any meeting for this cabinet day. Then I also received an apology from Honorable Member Bongpolo. And Pakis. Those are the apologies, and I'm going to give over Chairperson. If you want to say something, you're welcome to do it. It's a pleasure to hear you here. Knowing that after how many months, we don't have any...
over a year, Chairperson.
Over a year, yeah, now. Load sharing or whatever.
Well.
So we are glad, and I think all of us in South Africa is happy with the performance. We can see that where there is a vacancy, a village are back.
Yeah.
If you really put all your things, your attention and energy in the work that you love, I think I'm a good politician doing my work in my community because I like what I'm doing. Therefore, I know if you love what you're doing, you will do your best.
Sure.
Thank you very much. Over to
you. Thank you, Chairperson Prince and honorable members of the NCOP. Well, I'm very grateful for the sentiments you've expressed, but I must say that it is the Group Chief Executive and the executive members present here who have made this miracle, if you can call it, happen. After months or even more than a year of instability in our electricity supply, they've brought stability, they've brought reliance, and we're working. So thanks goes to them, and I'm glad you recognize that. We're also happy to be here to discuss the issue of tariffs, because tariffs are generally not understood by the public. The way they come out is always very antagonistic, conflictual. ESCOM presented as if they just want to grab as much money from the public as possible, which is not true. So my CEO and our Chief Finance Officer and the executives will go into detail about what happens with tariff applications. So can I ask then the CEO? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will ask the CFO to make a brief presentation and then we can have a discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian and Mr. Dr. Ngubani. We have prepared a presentation for the committee on the brief that was presented. And the objective of the presentation is really to give you an understanding of the ESCOM tariff process and also the implications for the municipal tariffs. So we will continue with the presentation on that basis. ESCOM tariffs are really regulated, so there is a wide range of regulations that ESCOM needs to comply with in setting its tariffs. And at the heart of those regulations is the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006. And in complying with, in ESCOM's compliance to the Act and the methodology that accompanies it, NERSA has been given the mandate to ensure that ESCOM actually applies and is granted tariffs in line with the applicable legislation, which is the Electricity Regulation Act. Also, legislation that is applicable to the municipalities is the Municipal Finance Management Act, or more commonly known as the MFMA. And it determines how, after NERSA has determined the tariff increases that are applicable for ESCOM in its entirety, that that will then be applicable to the municipalities. In terms of the regulatory process that ESCOM undertakes in terms of being able to set its tariffs, we have what we call MYPD rules. Now, MYPD stands for Multi-Year Price Determination, which basically means is that NERSA would give you a tariff determination for more than 1 year. So that's where the multi-price comes from. And in setting those rules, NERSA would basically look at, or the MYPD methodology is developed for the revenues, costs, depreciation that we'd incur on our assets, as well as being able to have to pay rates and taxes and all of those things. So that is basically the methodology, and it tells you how you must go about determining what revenues you can claim for, what costs you can claim for, what you can't claim for, and so on and so forth. The next aspect of the tariff setting process is basically, once ESCOM has compiled its tariff determination or its tariff application in line with the MYPD rules that NERSA has provided, NERSA then takes our application and reviews that application and says, based on what ESCOM is applying for, based on the rules that we put in place, is this a determination that is fair and reasonable? And then makes a determination. So the application that we submit to NERSA is not necessarily the same determination that NERSA makes. So there is a difference between the two. But in that determination, I think, Madam Chair, it is important to understand that even when NERSA makes the determination, it is based on forecasted revenue and forecasted costs and forecasted information. So it's basically saying, today we submitted an application, but we are giving you a tariff determination for the next 3 years. So that is looking into the future. And obviously, if you are looking into the future, there would have to be then a case where you say, when you actually are in the future, what actually then happens? And then you need to reconcile the two to say, this was the estimate, this was what actually happened, and therefore this is what you're then entitled to or not entitled to, as the case may be. So the last element of the tariff setting process is what we call the RCA process, or the revenue clawback adjustment. Now, the revenue clawback adjustment is also envisaged in the rules. So it's not something that comes over and above. It is not a new thing. It is basically envisaged in the MYPD rules. And if you look at the way that NERSA has set out the tariff setting process in these three blocks, it is actually a tariff setting process that is internationally acceptable. So if you go to any other regulated, electricity regulated entity or country, they would basically have a very similar type of process that are in these three chunks. So, Madam Chair, in applying this, let's call it theoretical model, we basically then say to you, at the bottom of the slide, you will see what we actually then physically have done as ESCOM and NERSA. So in applying the MYPD rules, Madam Chair, and we're now specifically talking about MYPD 3, which is applicable for the period financial year ending 31 March 2014 right up till financial year ending 31 March 2018, which is the MYPD 3 period. ESCOM submitted a tariff application to NERSA 2 years or 3 years ago, and the application that we submitted was for an application of 16%. So that is the first block, as you can see there. Applying the methodology, we ended up with a 16% tariff increase. NERSA, having done what it needed to do, which was in the middle block, determined that the 16% that we applied for, they would only grant ESCOM a tariff increase of 8% for each of the years between 2014 and 2018. So that is what we currently have as an approved tariff increase for each of the years. Now, as I said before, Madam Chair,
the determination is futuristic, so it looks into the future. When we actually then have incurred the costs in 2014, we then needed to do a reconciliation between what was in the determination and what was actually incurred. And based on the rules that govern the RCA process, we then needed to do the reconciliation, and as a result of that, Madam Chair, we submitted an application to NERSA, or an RCA application to NERSA, of 22.8 billion rand. NERSA then reviewed that 22.8 billion rand application and granted to ESCOM an 11.4 billion rand revenue adjudication, which translated into a 9.4% tariff increase. So that is the full spectrum of the tariff setting process, Madam Chair. And as a result of that, the tariff increases that you that our customers would have experienced in this financial year that we're currently in is a 9.4% tariff increase. Madam Chair, having taken you through the tariff setting process for ESCOM in its entirety, the next objective was to enlighten you in terms of how does that ESCOM tariff setting process that we've now determined being 9.4%, how does it translate into what happens at the municipality level? So, Madam Chair, again, the impact of the 9.4% tariff increase in its entirety, filtering down through to an ESCOM to a municipality level, is also determined by legislation as well as NERSA. Now, in terms of the municipalities, as I said before, the tariff increases are actually recovered from customers from the period 1 July of every year. So the municipal customers, the tariff increases are recovered over a period of 9 months. Whereas from the non-municipal customers, the tariff increases are recovered over a 12-month period, which runs from 1 April to 31 March of each financial year. In addition to that, Madam Chair, the ESCOM tariff increase as well as the municipal tariff increases have to be tabled to Parliament and attested to by Parliament by the 15th of March of each year. And Madam Chair, we can confirm that the 9.4% tariff increase for the current financial year was tabled in Parliament on the 14th of March by the Minister of Public Enterprises. Madam Chair, if you didn't look at the next slide, this is basically the slide that gives you a view of how the 9.4% tariff increase for ESCOM in its entirety translates into the municipal tariffs as well as the key segments and key customers that ESCOM currently has. As we said before, the standard tariffs was 9.4% that NERSA had determined. NERSA then determined that the municipal tariff increase for that would commence on the 1st of July would be an equivalent of 7.86%. And then we've got rural customers at 9.4% as well, key industrial and urban customers at 9.4%, and the home light and block 1 and block 2 tariffs would be 7.2% increase and 9% respectively. The home light 60 amp will be 9.4% and the home power 9.4%. Madam Chair, you would also see that some of these tariffs, and we'll explain that in the next slide, you see that there is differentiation between the tariffs, and this again is from a NERSA perspective as well as an ESCOM perspective, where we are cognizant of the fact that low-income households need to be provided with electricity, and obviously they probably would not be able to afford the 9.4% increase, and therefore we have a sliding scale of tariff increases, as you can see in the slide. More detail on the impact of ESCOM's activities on low-income households is encompassed on the next slide, Madam Chair, where you see that we basically have two initiatives that are aimed at assisting low-income households. And the first one is basically free basic electricity, or FBE as it's more commonly known. And this is a government initiative that is driven by the Department of Energy and funded by the National Fiscus. And as you can see, at this point in time, Eskom has about 1.5, just on short of 1.2 million customers approved to receive free basic electricity, with agreements signed with 243 municipalities. Madam Chair, it's also probably appropriate to say at this time that the Free Basic Electricity Initiative is actually an initiative that actually looks at it's a combination of ESCOM, the municipalities, as well as national government that effectively play a role for us to be able to roll out this initiative. Including also, Madam Chair, in terms of the other initiative, we've got inclined block tariffs, or this is basically where we're saying for, as you've seen on the previous slide, there is tariff differentiation. So to the extent that we have low-income households, we try and give them a lower increase in tariffs, whereas where you have industrial customers, basically they get the full 9.4% increase in the tariffs. Madam Chair, that's the impact on that's a contribution that ESCOM makes to ensuring that low income households are protected in terms of or shielded from tariff increases. In conclusion, Madam Chair, we'd like to confirm again that the 2016-17 tariffs that were determined by NERSA was implemented by ESCOM after having followed the due legislative process of tabling the tariffs before Parliament. And we will continue to collaborate with stakeholders across the country in engaging and discussing future tariffs and their frameworks going into the future. Municipalities play a key role in our business, Madam Chair, as a result, as they form a large portion of our revenue streams. And again, we will proactively work with them to address the key issues around the tariffs as well as outstanding debt. Madam Chair, also we'd just like to highlight that obviously affordability of electricity to the poor is of great concern to ESCOM, and we will continue with the initiatives that we currently have in place as explained. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Short and sweet. I think we all understand, because you explained to us very so that we can understand. I do understand, although I don't understand. I don't want to understand because it's going to cost me a bit more. But we know that certain things need to be done that we all can. I mean, without money you can do nothing. It's like I was saying this morning to my CR, I was listening to the students demanding free basic education in their lifetime. There's a lot of factors that you need to bring in an account. You cannot give an open hand kind of thing. You must determine who can afford to pay must pay. Those who cannot pay, government must look and see how we can bring all other role players together to assist government by giving those basic education to the people. And there's a lot of things that we, while we're sitting here as politicians, we also are ordinary people living in the same conditions outside. And it's how we're dealing with those things. I thank you for the presentation. I almost said something that I don't. I cannot say. CEO, I wanted to say, you know what I wanted to say, but CEO, yeah, that is it. I think you struggle for long time to get this increase, and we know what you were saying, the impact on the regulator, the increased tariffs for not implementing that was having on the regulator. But I'm going to allow the members to ask questions. I was telling some of our people there in the area where I came from how proud I was when I attending your annual figures results on the Dangdere, the phoning in, the technology that countries from how far was phoning in and asking questions, understanding, you know. And I was proud to sit there. I was not just listening. For me, it was an eye-opener on how other countries experience us and ask the relevant questions, not petty politic questions of why do you have to increase, what will the impact, relevant questions. And we are going to allow our people now to ask questions. I also have some questions, but I will post mine for the last, seeing if people going to go there. I won't ask. Honorable, now you must assist me with your surname, because
I've been with you for 2.5 years.
You are not attending my meeting. Honorable Nahula, sorry for saying that. But you know, if I mentioned you as you attending every day, I would know you out of, you know. But Honorable Kaula, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Safaku, Honorable Nita, Honorable Labaskahni, in that order, it's the first round. Others will come after that. Thank you very much.
thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to ESCOM for the presentation. The first thing I would like to understand is the issue of the electricity that is not accounted for, the illegal connections. In your issues that you factor when you plan your increases, where do we factor that one in? Is it ESCOM? Is it the municipalities? And who has to pay the price for it? Because it's all over the country. Part of it is in your lines, part of it is in the maybe municipal connections, but it's just all over. I would just like to understand that one. And when it happens, it also goes along with the issue of the culture of non-payment, which also affects municipalities dearly. I know it is a municipal issue, but when it does happen, it affects the whole structure of the tariffs. But municipalities, of course, have to account for it. But you know, there are instances where even if you are accountable, but some kind of leniency, if I can put it that way, has to be considered, because it is not the municipality that is saying to the people they must pay. It's just a culture that is there, which makes it then difficult for municipalities to be able to honor their engagements sometimes with ESCOM. That is my first one, Honorable Chairperson. The second one is on the free basic services, which also cuts across the municipality, it's ESCOM, it's government. But I am more interested on the issue of the inaccuracies in the free basic services, the instability, if you can put it that way, where you find out that one does not talk to the other. The free basic services in power do not talk to the free basic services in social issues. Free basic services in social issues don't talk to the free basic services in education. And the whole chain of the FBS, of the FBEs. Now, which also has got some kind of encouragement or impact on the culture of non-payment, because one is indigent with ESCOM, and is not, I mean, with power, and is not indigent with social grants. Is indigent with education, is not indigent with, you know, it is so inaccurate such that it also causes problems. I'm saying it affects everybody. Do you also factor that in? with your 9.1% and your 8.1%. And the last one, the issue of the prepaid, where you say you've got your industrial and urban, in your tariffs, you've got your home what, your home light, your home power, these different blocks you are referring to. I just wanted to understand again, how does it work? I come from the south coast of KwaZulu-Natal. Our Eskom head office in the area is Margate. Margate services both rural and urban. You have your Potchefstroom, your Margate, there's Mzumbe, there's Ezingolweni, etc., etc., etc. Now, in your tariffs, when I go to pay to buy my prepaid, how do I know that what you are saying to me has already been factored in, that it is rural? Because I'm buying from the same service point where the urban person is also buying from. The service point is the same for both rural and urban, but you are telling me here that our tariffs will not be the same if I'm rural, the one who is urban, but the saving point for both of us is the same. Now, how do I know that what you are telling me has been factored in? Because the saving point is the same for both of us, whether it's prepaid or it's the meter system. How does it work, this thing of saying the rural divide is different from the urban divide? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kamula. I will emphasize it.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join and welcome the presentation and be upfront to indicate that it was a very good learning exercise, CEO and Chair. We happened to have the opportunity as a committee, we went to Mtupi, and the team of the CEO led by Masango was able to assist us to have a better sense and understand even the challenges. So it's a commendable program, and every time when the committee is out to do oversight, if you can sustain what you have started, it will minimize to come to this forum to be seen as if we are on a very serious fault-finding mission. That was on a very positive note to acknowledge the good that you have done. The second thing that is very important, Chair, that I think I have to raise is for you, CEO and Chair, you'll know better. I think drafters of the Constitution, they had a very, very clear intention why they decided to have Parliament in South Africa as is. When we're introducing ourselves, all of us, we never just mention names like when you go to the other house. We're very clear that we're coming from different provinces, others from the kingdom, others from whatever. It's meant to represent the interest of those provinces at this level. So it's an appeal that if you go to the portfolio committee and you come to this side, in our side, have something that will reflect these provinces so that we're able. Last week, like for example, last week, all of us were in a provincial week. A provincial week, it means all of us, we go to the different provinces. I'm from Mpumalanga, all delegates from Mpumalanga, they were in Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Kingdom, all of them, they were in their provinces. And we go to these municipalities. And if we have this information, because knowledge is power, we're able to assist the challenges and we're able to ask them relevant questions because we have this information. So it's an appeal, Chair, that if you come to us as a select committee, not portfolio committee, it will always be good for us to have a slide that will show these provinces, these municipalities, and these challenges. Like, you have 115 customers that receive this free basic electricity. My first interest is, it will be good for me to know, where do you locate these 115 million customers? you might find that there are provinces that are more benefiting than the others. But I can get out to this meeting thinking things are happening only to find that there are those provinces that are left behind. But if I can have the relevant information, it means I will give credit where it's due. I will criticize where it's wrong and say, go and attend my province, Mpumalanga, here and there, basing it on facts, not using general knowledge to deal with you. So I'm interested in understanding the 115 million. Locate it for us to be able to talk about it out of a very informed position. That's the first one, Chair. The second one, it's about the issue of the legislation. You started, the first slide was dealing about the legislation. And you know very well that part of what we're doing as members of the of Parliament mainly is three things. It's oversight, public participation, and of course, making these laws. As ISCOM, are you satisfied about the current legislation that we have in South Africa to think it's addressing what is facing us as a country, given where we're coming from and what is the current situation facing you as ISCOM? The third one, if you can update us about these maybe top five or six of these defaulting municipalities. Because we are very clear that when we go to them, we want to be able to not only raise questions to you, yet we are failing our responsibility to assist you. We want to criticize you where we must, but we must at the same time be able to balance that with assisting you where we must assist. The other question, it's about what NERSA has granted you. How will that impact on your operations so that we have a better sense? Because we don't want to deal with your annual report at a later stage or deal with your performance at a later stage, and yet you presented something to us instead of dealing with that problem. And for the first time, probably you might be aware, after the president has signed that into law, as Parliament, we have that power now. We have very efficient academics. We've got a professor that is running the budget office. We're able to impact and amend even a budget, unlike in the past. So we don't want to fail in our responsibility because we don't have that information. That is why we want specifics. The last one, because it's linked to what was raised by Honorable Kaul, the challenges around prepaid meters in the Soweto area. If you can take us in terms of the update, because we'll have other meetings where we're engaging those people, but it's a very good clear presentation, and I'll emphasize, Chair, that every time when they are dealing with you and CEO, when we are on the ground as a select committee for your oversight, it's always good to have right people giving us the right information. And it made me especially to have a better sense, and I can speak with the challenges and what is going through, because it was more practical. Unlike this boardroom, we'll have this sometimes nice presentation, but once we are on the ground, and even on that day, I remember when we went to Segusile, the unfortunate thing happened on that day because a person died out of an accident there. And it made us to appreciate and how that situation was handled whilst we were there visiting. And it made us to have a better sense to understand the challenges facing ISCOM and what we are doing. And once we come to the boardroom, we have a better understanding. Unlike, well, I'm one person that not only enjoy this thing of boardroom. I want us to be out, have more better understanding so that we criticize, give credit where it's due, and the information will always be regarded as power. And if we don't have it, we're going to rely on what we'll be reading from reliable sources, and I take you out of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Honorable Safa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation of ESCOM, which is a very, very important entity, of course, that is supplying power to the electricity, which has managed to make that this electricity is now accessible to the deep rural areas. I've indicated that I'm from Northwest. It's more rural, but with mushrooming mineral resources, the platinum in particular around Rustenburg. On the Klerksdorp, there's also the gold there. South Africa, we are export-driven economy, where we are exporting the bulk of our mineral resources. Are we near, can we be ascertain that the power that we are having in South Africa can assist in starting processing for beneficiation of this raw material in South Africa in order to create more wealth and employment in our country? A lot has been said, but also on the question of the free basic electricity. Is it a partial or is a real 100% free basic where I can say a granny and tlatlaganyani can really have a free access to electricity? Maybe the last one is do you have a real security in ensuring that this valuable commodity called electricity cannot just be easily be in the hands of highly corrupt activities where people are easily selling this commodity cheaply? You go to a corner where you can just go and buy it, it will be giving you 100 or 1,000 meters. How do you counteract such activities? Because indeed it is rife. Engaging communities, having some outreach program that can conscientize the community. Do you have such? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also join those that have appreciated the report which was presented to us. Chair, I want also to lash on the issue of unaccounted electricity. But I want to check from the leadership of ESCOM if there is a proposal that they can table to us that would help them and the municipalities in terms of policy boards or policy makers to cap this. I'm raising this because you have areas in Eastern Cape that are mushrooming informal settlement and formal big structures that are next to the airports that are stealing the electricity, and that can have very serious implications to the airport. In other areas, we've got informal settlements that are mushrooming next to the hospital. Again, if they can be shut down there, it can cause a serious disaster for the country. So now it's no longer about who is supposed to control what. It's about collectively the ESCOM and as well the municipality to think about the policy or a piece of legislation that can help them both to deal with this. Apart from that, it also has implications in terms of
accounting to the Auditor General, because you have to account for the electricity that has not been paid for by the community. The next point from my side is about free basic electricity to rural areas. You know, I had an experience in Stuttering, where those people in Stuttering, they are supposed to be getting this token to go and get electricity, but they have to travel to King Williamstown. It may not be your own making as Eskom, that the service provider that provides electricity is in King Williamstown. But I'm just raising that as an issue, that where you are responsible for providing electricity, think very careful about where you have your center where this electricity is provided. Because you may think that that number you are giving us, those people are getting it. They are not. Because the money that they spent to go and collect the token is far more than what you give them as an electricity. The other point is I know that you provide electricity in rural areas, and of course there is a certain percentage that you are lesser than the municipality. And my question has always been that, why are you providing electricity, for instance, in metros to rural areas? Because it does have implications to their finances as a municipality. So in my view, where you provide electricity, I always had this thing that says maybe the municipality doesn't have enough capacity to do so. But if it's a big municipality that can be able even to cover your rural areas, why are you providing electricity there? The last one on the rural, we picked up that the special schools, it may not be your ESCOM issue, but because you're also providing in rural areas, and this school is in a rural area in Alfredso, they are complaining about you compare them with those institutions that are doing business. Yet they are supposed to be an institution that provide a special service. So you think institutions like your municipalities and also ESCOM will take that into consideration. There is nowhere where you pick up that there are those institutions of special needs, people with disabilities, institutions that are quite big, that are having bulk electricity that they are using due to a number of things that they are doing. It's just a question if we do pick up that. But in municipalities, we did pick that up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got quite a few questions. I would like to know from Eskom's side, what would be the impact of an 11.4 billion instead of the 22.8 billion that you requested in the next medium framework? Then on page 3 on that Eskom's regulatory process, that table that you gave out there, the NERSA determination. It says Eskom aligns the cost base of the business to the determination. What informs that cost base? Then you're talking in this, we've received two documents, one prior to the meeting and one in the meeting. Asking from all to both of them. You refer to unintended consequences of inclining block tariff. These unintended consequences. Can you give us a broader picture of that unintended consequences? And then there's a question that's already been raised, the question on the reason why prepayment customers are not the focus of the IBT, and it's rolled out in general, that statement that you make in your documents. And I would like to know, under the challenges, you mentioned that district, that's in the first document, that district energy forums stays a challenge. I would like you to enlighten the committee on what is the problems with district energy forums and the role they play. Then the statement on municipalities or municipal businesses is a key component to Eskom's revenue, which I accept, and it's true. But we are on tariffs. You are making a presentation to this committee on tariffs, and then you refer to a few things. Business is a key component, but no mention has been made of mining. Municipalities is a key component. No, nothing has been mentioned by the mining industry, the business industry, any other industrial industries, and the tariffs to them, how does they fit into this whole picture? The rebates or the lower cost of energy that has to be given to them, and that into alignment and balance to the rest of the users. We all know that we need to grow the economy of this country, and we all know and we realize that there has to be made certain adjustments. But this committee need to have a full picture, and we've listened to one sector of the end users of electricity, and that is the tariff and the key component of municipalities. And then we know that our poor index in our country is very high. Therefore, a lot of municipalities, either by mismanagement and or the fact that they have poor residents or a combination of those two, owes Eskom a lot of money. We know that. And there was a question raised by Honorable Nyambi for you to give the background on that, so I will not ask that question again, but I would like to know what is the other key clients and how does it fit into your broader picture. Then I would like to, you said that you've got a specific formula that you use to determine your revenue and your costs. For me, as a normal person on the street that I represent here, to me there's various factors. If you listen to the news on the radio and you read your papers and you don't have any other information, then you know that Eskom in the past years, when it started with load sheddings and things, various things has been said, such as the low maintenance, the non-investment in new energy in generation, the capacity and the lack of the technical skills. And a lot has been done by Eskom to address some of these things, and there's been a lot done to address the low maintenance. But nowhere in this whole program, Eskom today presented this committee on the influence of the building program, of your building programs. So we know about the building programs. That's in pieces, Medupi, Kuseli, Ingula. And none of these building programs were without big problems. Strikes, contracts that didn't go well. Ingula, there was an incident there, an accident where people died. There was an investigation done. I would like Eskom to tell to this committee, what is the implication of the delays of these things. At this stage, some of the costs, as like Medupi or Ingula would say, it would have been built by, with a cost of 23 billion. At this moment, some people say the cost runs to 90 billion. And all these information. So, Chair, I would also like, I would like the Eskom to tell us today what is the influence of this on the tariffs. But I would also request Eskom to come back to us at the other stage to give us a full picture on the building program of Eskom and how other new alternative energy projects feeds into Eskom. Then the MYD, the medium year determination 3, the shortfall runs around about 225 billion, if I make by some, if I wasn't that good in maths, but that's what I come to. The municipalities round about 11.7 billion, Soweto itself only on its own 9.8 billion. All these costs are not being covered by the increase as yet. So what do we face in future? And how is this going to be managed? Then the last thing, at the PCPE meeting in March 2015, the Minister Lynn Brown said that the war room was not satisfied with the credibility of the information received by Eskom on its financial and sustainability information. And you all know what happened about on with the board and so on, and a deep dive investigation has been done and so on. In what way can you ensure this committee that the financial information is credible? Because everything that goes to NERSA, that these tariffs had to be based on, has to be credible. Now, that's not what I've said, this is what the minister said. We haven't got the information yet on what has been done, what has been corrected. So I would like you to comment on that. Then, the other two questions has been asked by the other people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of the questions have been asked. Some of your of the municipalities who have defaulted treasury held back the allocations. And as far as you're concerned, what is the state of defaulting municipalities? Because there are some that their allocations was held back so that they could pay Eskom. Secondly, what is your plans regarding areas where there's no electricity, the deep rural areas, and some of these areas still got have got government buildings like schools? Can you maybe give the committees your plans, because we've always been asked by people? Then also the type, the strength of the electricity that's supplied in these areas is not in line with the strength that is supplied in urban areas. Could you talk to us about that? Then I would align myself with my colleague Honorable Nita as well on the prepaid electricity in rural areas. Some people have traveled close to 90 kilometers to buy electricity. Are you able to come up with a system where it would be easier for them, or through the cell phone, whichever? Is there a possibility that you can come up with such a system to help them to, so that they don't spend so much money on buying electricity? Then also, I'm also interested in a tariffs for business. Is there a difference between tariffs for business and your rural areas? Or is it a rebate or whichever? If you can just fill us in on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ramu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by ESCOM executives. Mine is not a long one. It was touched by Honorable Nyambi about the prepaid meters in Soweto. But the problem that I have, because it's what in Komabone, is that there's a bit of confusion in terms of who provides electricity around Johannesburg, because there is city power. And it is not clear, because when, for instance, there is a problem of load shedding, you won't see city power cars coming to fix whatever problem that is there, whether it's cable theft or... But you'll see ESCOM cars. So our people out there, they don't understand, or they can't distinguish between city power and ESCOM. So if that can be cleared by ESCOM, for the public out there to have a better understanding of who exactly is responsible, especially in Johannesburg, for electricity. Because one other thing is that you'll find that there are inspectors hired by the city. That's another confusion. They will say they are from city power. And our people will ask, and then where does ESCOM fit in? You know? Because I'm always at work, and the meter is inside the house. Sometimes the issue of billing in Johannesburg, it becomes a problem. You'll find that water meters outside, but electricity meters are inside the houses. So if we can at least get clarity from the executive here as to who is responsible for electricity around Johannesburg. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's just two things. On slide 14, challenges. The second bullet from the bottom and the fourth one. Challenges with FBE being provided to farm workers, as the farmer generally holds the contract. And also the fourth one, non-adherence by municipalities to indigenous register. as the committee, the select committee, what is it that you think the committee can assist you to overcome some of these challenges? Thank you.
Thank you, honorable member. From my side, I think I'm covered by most of the questions. The farm workers one, the honorable member asked, the CEO came to the call, said this morning, when I was there, I raised the concern of farm workers, access to electricity. Farmers refuse to put electricity there. If you just can explain to us what your plans are in future to do, or do we need to propose a policy to address it, or what do we, how are we going to address that problem? I want to understand. I don't know all these things. I heard some municipalities was complaining about, I don't know, you will know what I try to say. If they were, you people didn't, I don't know if there is a certain grading, or how do you call it, or is it part of the rural urban things, how you charge them. Terrorists, I don't know what. People are complaining, was not right, they are, I don't know what. Maybe you know how it works, but they was complaining even. They have to apply and write letters to you because they was wrongly, especially those municipalities in the area, telling us. I cannot recall what they were saying, what was the problem, but it seems to me there's a special thing with different municipalities. I don't know if it's something to do with the grading of municipalities, or is it part of the rural community. You can maybe explain to us. Maybe it's difficult, I can find out from them and then post the question in writing if it is difficult for you to understand what I try to say. But I pick it up in Carnaland as well as in the Overberg at one municipality where the MM was saying they must write a letter because we only charge them and so forth. So. But I think I must write a letter asking them. The other thing was I want to understand. This indigenous is free basic servicing. I know that government is giving its portable share on the population. What is your contribution to the municipality by helping those municipalities to address the basic service? I just want to understand. So if I'm standing there and having a meeting or talk about, to the people about this electricity, the high electricity, people will say it's you people. I know that government, local government is increasing every year the tariff. I don't know if it is the same with Eskom. But in the view of the people, and some people is telling the people it's Eskom. It's only Eskom, it's only Eskom. So that I can understand how it works, because sometimes I now hear, because as a local, as a councillor at that time, we were always saying that yeah, tariffs increase, but not more than 15%, so much for electricity, so much and so on. So I didn't know those years that there is a regulator who look at the increases on electricity. I now only understand the regulation part of it. The losses. More than less, how many losses in electricity from your side is there per year? We always get the figure in the local municipality or they reported how many losses. Is it part of the cable thefts and all the electricity illegal connections and this? And if you compare it, is that also having an impact on your performance? And with that, what is the thing? This 16% double in the increasing if you apply it. Is it going to have a negative impact on your business? And if so, what do you think or what did you put in place
to foresee that you will be coming to ground. Because NERSA didn't approve the 16% at one time. Remember you explained to us the impact of not approving the 16%. How do you see the 9%? Or is it not going to happen? Thank you.
Well, I must thank the Chairperson and the Honourable Members for raising very relevant issues. You are indeed representing the grassroots of this country, and we take very serious note of what you have raised. I'm hoping that our customer services are going to listen to this and put plans to work with local government more closely. I mean, it is not enough to have access, but you also need to have access to services. So when people have to travel long distances to collect their token, it cancels the benefit of free basic electricity. Very important points. I would like to correct the issue of credibility of our figures. You know, through our minister, shareholder minister, we apply to the Auditor General to give us authority to appoint an auditor or ask to appoint an auditing firm, or else he audits us himself. Now, these audit firms obviously have got good standing, otherwise the Auditor General would not approve them. So I'm worried when it said that audited statements, which we use to apply to NERSA for the MYPD, may be defective, because it means then the audit system in the country is defective. But I will let my CEO and senior officials answer.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first start by talking about the successful visit of the committee to Medupi. Was led by Abraham Masango, who is present here today. We want to thank the kind words that the members of the committee have to say about the Medupi project, and also announce that since the visit, we have had tremendous progress at Medupi. I think when the committee visited, Unit 6 of Medupi was operating. But as I speak today, Unit 5 has also been synchronized to the grid. Now what it means is that Unit 5 is now being tested. So it is operating, it is connected to the grid, it has not been handed over for commercial use, and it will be handed over for commercial use way ahead of the deadline that we had for it. For 2017, end of 2017, early 2018. We think that Unit 5 of Medupi will be in commercial operation by February of next year, which is way ahead of schedule. And we thought we should report the tremendous progress that is being made. After Unit 5, Unit 4 will also come online, and Unit 3, Unit 2 and Unit 1. And we have said in the past that the day that Unit 5 comes into commercial operation, load shedding will no longer be an issue in South Africa. And so, although we have not had load shedding for a year, this confirms that our confidence in the fact that we will not have load shedding going forward because of the operation of Unit 5. Unit 6 and Unit 5 of Medupi give us, between the two of them, 1,600 megawatts of electricity. And this goes with the success that we had at Ingula, where three units of 333 megawatts each have been commissioned and give us about 1,000 megawatts. So I thought we should just start on that note of the success that we are now experiencing at Medupi. Kusile, we expect, will also be delivered and we are making enormous progress in delivering Unit 1 of Ekusile on time. The first question was about illegal connections and who pays for illegal connections. Illegal connections are a problem. And the illegal connections sometimes happen at the level of the municipalities. Sometimes they happen where Eskom supplies directly. And they just represent dead weight losses, which is losses that we suffer in the system. The question is, however, what is the solution to illegal connections? We think that by introducing prepayment or prepaid meters, people will take responsibility for the electricity that they consume. And so if there are any illegal connections, they would have to be connected to somebody's prepaid electricity, and that would help us in the management of illegal connections. And so that is why we believe that the fast tracking of prepayment is very critical. The question then becomes, and I think it is asked later about the tampering with the prepayment system and the fact that people are sometimes using illegal coupons. But I will come back to that question later when I answer the question about criminality. The culture of non-payment also, we think, will be resolved by introducing prepayment. Because if you are on prepayment, on prepaid, and you have not paid for your electricity simply does not come on until it has been paid for. And we think that this is a simple solution that we should take forward for South Africa. There was a question about free basic services, and that the free basic services in electricity are not aligned with free basic services in other social services like water and other social issues. Well, the free basic services are determined by municipalities and the free basic electricity. And they tell us, and they give us the list of indigenous communities, and they also tell us how much we should give to those communities. So the policy of free basic services is actually, and the coordination is done at municipality level. And in fact, we are just given instructions, literally, by the municipalities on which households and which indigent households should be given free basic services. The coordination with other social services, I think, is in the hands of the municipalities, and I think it is in the right hands there. We do not endeavor to interfere or to try and coordinate our activities with other social services that the municipalities are providing. There was a question about if the prepaid service point is the same for rural and urban households, how do we know that the correct payment is being made at the center? Now, I believe that every single address, every single household that has electricity has an address, and in the account of that household, even if it is postpaid or prepaid, the card tells us about exactly where the residence is. If we have your account number, electricity account number, or electricity card, we know exactly where you stay, and so it's regulated at that level. So the moment you present the number, the system would know if it is an urban or a rural household and exactly where that house is located. We are able, by simply punching into the system your account number, to know exactly where your house is. In fact, we even know the coordinates of your house, where exactly it is located, because that system is kept, that information is kept in the system. So we know exactly where each household that pays for electricity comes from. The other question was whether we are satisfied about the legislation. We are generally satisfied about legislation if we could make recommendations. I know that it was said in the media that Mr. Molefe is not competent to talk about policy, but if you allow me to just venture as just a low official, a lowly official, to come and make one or two comments. We think that the process of NERSA and the tariff applications, if during the determination one party or ourselves as Eskom are not happy with one aspect, or maybe if NERSA has erred in a particular area, there is no way that you can go to appeal, except maybe to the courts. But then the courts are not specialized electricity courts, and these are very technical matters. So we would be happier if there was a possibility for us, if we think that there was an error in calculation or an error in the interpretation of rules, that we would have a place to appeal to. That is one area. The second area is, we think prepayment of electricity should actually be standardized. I think perhaps we should have in the whole country accept the principle of the prepayment of electricity by everybody, because that would resolve our problems. And maybe the shortest way of doing that is by introducing legislation on prepayment, and that people that receive the service of electricity will prepay for it. That will resolve all our issues, because we will not have municipal debts in arrears, because everything would have been prepaid. We will not have all the problems that we have with arrears. We would cut the costs of collections, of post-date, of sending accounts, and so on and so forth. So if, imagine the situation where the whole of South Africa was on prepayment, a lot of our problems, administrative problems, would be resolved. And it's just an idea, but then again, I must emphasize that I'm not competent to talk about policy. I just respectfully submit. The top 5 or 6 defaulting municipalities are in the Free State, the Northern Cape, and the Eastern Cape. Northern Cape. Free State, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape. And the Mpumalanga. Just one or two. It's not a no, Northwest very minimal. But what we have proposed in this defaulting municipalities is that perhaps, because in certain instances it is just capacity to collect and to interpret the rules and to take the correct council resolutions to effect administration of electricity provision, what we have proposed is that perhaps what we should do in some of these municipalities is for Eskom to step in and install prepaid meters and collect revenue, and then pass over to the municipalities the portion of those collections that would have been due to the municipalities. That takes away from the municipalities the burden
of collecting, but it still ensures that they get the revenue that they were entitled to in terms of the constitution. And so ESCOM is proposing to serve as an agent, a collection agent for those municipalities, especially where there is a huge capacity problems in the collection of revenue. We have had extensive discussions with the Eastern Cape province and the municipalities in the Eastern Cape as well as in the Free State about this proposal, and it has been received very well. And in fact, at the moment, we're just doing audits in some of the municipalities to see how many prepaid meters will be required so that we can order them and install them and start this process. And we will be rolling this out, but focusing mainly on the municipalities that have arrears. If we can implement this, the benefit is that at least we stop the debt from increasing. And over time, we can talk about how we then recover the historical debt that we reinvest. There was a question about how the, and it was asked several times in different ways, about how the tariff that we have applied for of 16%, and then we got 9.4%, how that impacted operations. And maybe the CFO can talk to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brian. Through you, Madam Chair. Yes, it. We have gone through a process of reprioritizing the business plan to ensure that the aspirations that we had associated with 16% tariff will be achieved through the 9.4% tariff. So, and that plan is a continuous plan, Madam Chair. So we are continuously looking and re-looking at the plan to be in a position to ensure that the capital expenditure program that is required to be delivered is delivered. We have a capital expenditure program of 343 billion as per the latest corporate plan. In order to ensure that that capital plan is delivered, we have a robust funding program that is in place of 327 billion rand, and through the graces of government as well as the National Treasury, we have a 350 billion rand government support framework that basically allows us to access government guarantees to be able to execute the current corporate plan. So, Madam Chair, yes, there has been a deficit in terms of the 16% versus the 9.4. But at this stage, Madam Chair, with the borrowing program that we have in place as well as the access to government guarantees, we are relatively comfortable that we'll be able to meet our mandate of providing a security of supply as it relates to electricity.
Thank you. And the next question was about prepaid meters in Soweto and the progress that has been made. We've made huge progress with the installation of prepaid and smart meters in Soweto. These we have discussed with the community leaders in Soweto about the installation of these meters. We're in a almost a permanent state of consultation with the installation of these meters. There are, however, certain people in Soweto that are not happy with the installation of prepaid meters. We can only fathom this to mean that it is the movement from non-payment to the certainty of payment for which some people have fear. And I must say that generally the community leaders in Soweto support the idea that people should pay for their electricity. It's not a commonly held view, but there are certain members in society who are unhappy about the fact that there will be the certainty of payment from Soweto. We have had unfortunate incidents. On Sunday, there is a group of people at night that marched and went to our stores and banned prepaid meters that were in stock. And the incident was repeated again last night. We are increasing security, cooperating with the South African police, but we are continuing
with the installation of prepaid meters. Our concern when these things happen is first and foremost the security of our employees, and we would like to appeal to community leaders in Soweto to help us to at least secure the lives of employees that work in Soweto that are assisting with the installation of the prepaid meters. But fortunately, in both incidents, we did not have any people injured or killed. However, a lot of damage was made to the prepaid meters that were held in stock there. The next question was about whether we can be certain that power is sufficient for beneficiation. We now are in a fortunate situation that we do not have load shedding, and in fact we have excess capacity. As I said earlier, the coming online of MIDUP Unit 5, or the synchronization of MIDUP Unit 5, means that load shedding is a thing of the past. But it has been a thing of the past for a year already. And now we have excess capacity. We reported that we have increased our sales of electricity, export sales of electricity to Southern African countries, that increased by about 12% in the year that ended to in on the 31st of March 2016. But more interestingly is that in fact we have so much capacity that this past weekend a unit of Majuba Power Station was actually shut down just because we have too much electricity. And that unit is on reserve. It will be switched on if we require it. It will be switched on 24-hour notice. So if there is industrial activity that is required to be done, we would like to announce that we have all the electricity that is required. We had a meeting with the Chamber of Mines yesterday and assured them that we do have sufficient capacity for their expansion project and that they should not pull back. And this capacity will be available and will increase over the next couple of years as Midupi Unit 4, 3, 2, 1 are finalized, as well as Kusilo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So electricity as a constraint of for economic growth is an argument of yesterday. Today we have enough electricity, fortunately. On the question of whether full basic electricity is partial or it is full basic electricity, I will ask John Conrad, what is Madam?
The free basic electricity, I think it's important, it's already been said. The free basic electricity is a policy from government, DOE, that has determined that they provide 50 kilowatt hours per household per month, and they provide the money to municipalities. And it's because of legislation, money can't be added over to Eskom. It's paid to municipalities as part of the Equitable Share Fund. Unfortunately, Equitable Share Fund is not prescriptive. You use it for infrastructure support, and therefore the municipalities have their own indigent registers and own policies around how they apply. Some of them provided just a certain amount, 50 or 75 or whatever, across the board to everybody, and to make it easier, to make it simpler. Others implemented the indigent register, and in terms of that, they informed Eskom then to supply that and Eskom provide it. Now, one of the things what we said is, the challenges we said is, depending on how the Equitable Share Fund is utilized, there might be, in certain months, they can take out certain of the Eskom customers from that list, and we just have them to not provide it, so that can happen. The next thing is it totally free? It is free up to the point that specific municipality allows for. So if it's 50 or 75, that is free. if you use more than that, so that's also the incentive to keep the usage low. If it is more that they use more than that, then they are paying the second block in terms of nurse position, the second block rate of it. So they will then start to pay for it beyond the level that it is provided. So I don't know if that answers.
Thank you. And the next question was whether electricity security is assured so that it is not sold illegally. We have strengthened our security department and restructured it. We have employed Brigadier General retired, Temo Harakau, who's sitting at the end of the table. There are several operations that are underway to make sure that electricity is not sold illegally and that we can get to the syndicates. I don't know if you want to comment on that, General.
Thanks, Chair. I think just to add on what we have, you have said, besides the fact that we have also strengthened our investigation and intelligence gathering capacity, the legislation has also empowered us. I think on the 1st of June this year, Critical Infrastructure Act came into being, which solved the dichotomy which used to exist within the criminal justice system, because in the past, when you are being arrested, for instance, for a piece of copper, the sentence will be proportional to the value of that copper, not the downstream effect. So that act has changed that, and to that effect, as we speak from June up to now, we have got 30 cases only for Eskom. Telkom and Transnet might also have their own cases. And this case involves about 89 people. So we'll be watching the space whether the act is being implemented accordingly by the courts. But yes, it has helped us a lot. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, and the next question was, is there a proposal that could help in curbing stolen electricity? As General has just explained, we appreciate the fact that the Parliament has passed the legislation that strengthens our hands in curbing the theft of electricity. But I would like to go back to the proposal of prepaid, because what happens with prepaid is that the electricity will have to be stolen from somebody that has already paid for it. And so it will help us immensely in getting to the bottom of the problem. So it will be theft from people, and then, rather than just general theft and people see it only when they account, when they receive the account 30 days later, it will be live. And so it will help us with the electricity. So legislation, if I can go back to my prayer for prepaid legislation, would help us a lot in curbing electricity. We want to accept there's a question about free basic areas to rural areas, and that sometimes we have not thought about the costs of logistics to go and buy free basic electricity. I think this is very constructive criticism, and I think that we should go back and look at those areas and try and have a standard of what is the distance that is acceptable for people to go and buy electricity, and make infrastructure available for people to buy electricity, especially in the rural areas. And I can promise that we will investigate this matter and make sure that we intervene appropriately to make sure that especially poor people do not incur huge logistical costs in procuring electricity. On the institutions with special needs, I don't know if Tace, you want to talk about that?
Thank you, Chief.
I also want to add to that the poor schools. Because
because the schools in the poor areas is complaining about the electricity bills they cannot afford, very, very huge amount. Can we not, I don't know how this was made, treat it like basic services, this kind of subsidizing maybe system that we have in the local government? I'm just thinking because where we went, oversight, the complaint about the huge accounts, they cannot afford to pay. And it is no fees, schools where the problem is. Obviously, we need to do something in the area.
Thank you. Currently, there is no special tariffs for such institutions. The standard ESCOM tariffs, as approved by the regulator, is applied to. But I think there's definitely challenges. We find it with schools, we find it with hospitals as well, where they got conventional meters. Again, a prepaid meter might help it. But then there's a contract, and then the Department of Education or the Department of Health are not necessarily paying those accounts. And sometimes, and unfortunately, it leads to ESCOM having to disconnect also for non-payment. But I think if of free basic services in that environment, probably it could be a policy issue as well that needs to be looked at.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just hasten, Chair, to mention that before there is rumor mongering by the chattering classes, two of our EXCO members are on special training at Harvard Business School, and so we have some people that are acting. So if you do not see all the EXCO members here, some people are acting, and it's not because they've been fired or they have left the organization. They have gone for very intensive training at the School of Business at Harvard, and we'll be returning at the end of October. There was a question about what informs the cost base when we do a tariff, and the unintended consequences of block tariff.
I think in terms of the cost base of the organization is obviously determined by the cost drivers, and the cost drivers of the organization currently are, as you correctly pointed out, I think there's the main item is really the cost of primary energy, which is coal by and large, and the cost of independent power producers. Secondly, it's obviously the manpower costs. And then thirdly, it's the costs associated with maintaining the plants that we currently have that produce electricity. And if you then look further, those costs are obviously costs that are directly related to producing electricity. Then there are costs associated with being able to pay taxes to South African Revenue Services. There's interest that we would need to pay to our funders of our borrowing program. So all of those costs would effectively inform the cost base of the organization as it stands currently. In terms of the unintended consequences on the block tariff, I think maybe Dion, you can.
Briefly, thank you, Chair. The unintended consequences, and I think.
Sorry, Dion, before you go, you can also deal with the issue of the energy forums, which is the next question.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do now. Because it links back to the energy forums. The inclining block rate, when it was implemented by NERSA in 2011, that was just done across the board for all residential tariffs. Now clearly that becomes extremely complex and also had the unintended consequences that the people that can afford electricity also received subsidies and they were benefiting from that. Since then we have made proposals to NERSA, which they accepted, and we have now implemented still inclining block rate. But there is now, we differentiate now between the customers using a lot more consumption with a lower consumption. The second one of it is that it is complex, and that's where the energy forums and those in the districts come about. Because in the rural areas, the people do not always have the understanding and the knowledge around how these things work. And it is complex because now you go to the center, you customer service center, you purchase electricity for, and remember, it was designed based on the fact that the more you use, the more you pay. But now in our case, the people don't buy kilowatt hours. They pay rand. They go about 20 rand or 100 rand. So now they go the first week, they pay 100 rand and they get a certain amount of electricity. In many cases in the rural areas, those guys don't understand it. So when they go next time, they get less and they don't understand how that works. So that's what I mean by complicated and unattended consequences. We had one story heard that even one of the vendors was shot at because he thought the guy is stealing his money. So that's part of that unintended consequences, and that's where we believe the energy forums can play a major role in helping explaining. Also in terms of FPE, the question was made, how successful is FPE rolled out? In those forums, they can assist the local people to make sure that they go to their local municipalities and request for that FPE.
Thank you. Thais, maybe you can talk about mining and industry with respect to alignment and balance on tariffs.
Thank you, Chair. I think part of the presentation has indicated as well the different rates for the industrial and the mining tariffs in one slide. And currently the composition, municipalities or redistributors contributes about 41% of the Eskom revenue base, whereas industry is in the region of about 23.4%, and then mining is in the region of 14.3% of the Eskom revenue base. But all of that, and the cost of supply to those different categories of customers is taken into account when the tariffs are set and then approved by the regulator.
Thank you. I'm not sure, maybe we can talk about the impact of the capital bill program on tariffs, the special reference to the RUP.
Thank you. Brian, I will take this opportunity just to rectify one of the misconceptions, I think particularly on Imbula. I think the pooling cost on Imbula currently is sitting at about 27 billion. There is no indication from the Eskom perspective that cost will be anywhere near 90 billion for Imbula, so we can put that concern to rest firstly. And then moving to the implication of cost and schedule slippages on the tariff. Yes, indeed, I think Medupi and Kusile has unfortunately suffered cost and schedule slippages, which, as the Honourable Member has requested, that we would come and provide and implications thereof at a later stage. But certainly from a tariff perspective, I think the 343 billion rand capital program that I've mentioned earlier takes into account these revised cost estimates from Dupi and Kusile. We are very comfortable at this stage, as Ryan has already mentioned, that the program in terms of delivering the Dupi units 1 to 6 and Kusile units 1 to 6 is ahead of schedule. That gives us a lot of comfort that the cost estimates that we've included in the 343 billion will be met and will not escalate further. So as a result of that, Madam Chair, the tariff increases that we are applying to NERSA for, we are relatively comfortable that would ensure that the affordability of those programs will be secured.
Chair, the main reason for the cost and delays, cost slippage and delays for Kusile, it's mainly that in 1998, when Eskom warned that we need new power stations, Eskom was ignored. And Eskom had said we will need new power stations by 2008. I know that because I was in the Treasury. And 10 years later, that threat materialized, and we needed new power stations. And the reaction was a knee-jerk reaction, where we tried to build these power
patients very quickly, and in fact taking plans from other power stations and adapting them to suit Medupi, and starting the building of the power stations without design freeze, which means that there were changes happening all the time. And these are the reasons why we had cost runaways and delays. Today, Eskom is saying that by 2030, we will need electricity from nuclear to supply our electricity requirements beyond 2030. We start the nuclear program now, the first unit could be activated around 2028-2030. If we continue with the bickering that we are experiencing now and saying instead of doing something that is meaningful, in 2035 we will be back in the same position. That is our warning, and that is born out of experience, bitter experience of the last 10 years. Honorable Labuskakhna says that can we assure that the financial information that Eskom provides is credible? Well, the financial information that Eskom provides is audited by auditors, independent auditors, appointed by the Accountant General. And Honorable Labuskakhna, if you to go through our financial statements, you will see that we have received a clean audit that says that our profits increased from 200 million to 4 billion in 1 year, and that is audited by a reputable firm. I know that it is difficult to believe that that is credible, but fortunately it is, Honorable Asfah. And those are the facts, the cold hard facts, that we have turned around. Our balance sheet is much better than what it was a year ago, despite the desire of some amongst us. On the question of areas that do not have electricity at all, South Africa is at 90% electrification, up from 37% in 1994. More people have access to electricity than we had in before 1994. And in fact, the 10% that is remaining, we hope we will be able to get to those people by 2022. Maybe even by the turn of the decade if we accelerate the program. And that 10% is mainly in three provinces. It's the Eastern Cape, especially around the Umzimkulu area, between KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, where people still do not have electricity because the terrain is very hostile. Limpopo, as well as KwaZulu-Natal, northern KwaZulu-Natal. We are focusing on those areas, especially the Eastern Cape, and making sure that those people have electricity. The good news is there are provinces in South Africa that have 100% electrification. And I think sometimes we talk about the 10% and not the 90% that have electricity. It's a good story about the 90% that have electricity. Free State has 100% electrification. Gauteng has 100% electrification. Northern Cape, very close to 100%. Western Cape has got 100% electrification. And Northwest is at about 95%. So we are working very hard to make sure that the people that still do not have electricity have electricity. There was a question also that was asked about the quality of the electricity that people now have. We acknowledge that there are quality issues in certain areas. But our plea is that as South Africa, we just focus on the people that don't have electricity at all first, and make sure that they get electricity. And when we are at 100% electrification, our projects will then become increasingly enhancement of what we have. But for now, let us use the electricity that we have sparingly. Let us appreciate the little that we have. And remember that there are families still in South Africa today that have never had electricity since the birth of this country, or since the birth of this continent, thousands of years ago. They've never had electricity. So it is those people that I think we should prioritize. And every time we talk about a localized distribution problem, we must think about those people that have never had electricity at all. I hear people complain that sometimes our reaction time of 3 hours is too long when there is a local problem. I appreciate that it is too long, but please, I ask that sometimes we also think about the people that have never had electricity at all. And there was a question about tariffs for business. John?
I think the question was, and I think the issue is around urban and rural, and maybe I can answer some of that as well. When Eskom designs its tariffs, it tries to recover it in a cost-effective manner, and it's, the cost is sort of allocated into three driving forces, which is one, is the energy that's generated electricity at the power station. The second one, the networks that need to go out to provide the power. And thirdly, it's a small component, is the services component. Now, as you know, the biggest component, especially moving out in the rural environment, is to build the thousands and thousands of kilometers of lines. So all those poles, all those wires, all of it. So it costs quite extensively to provide out in the rural areas. Now, you cannot recover that cost from the customers because nobody will be able to afford. So our large industries and mines and those, they all subsidize at this stage the networks of the areas in those. But we've put in a token thing and we've split it between urban and rural. We've categorized that because otherwise the customer, for example, there's a 20-kilometer line will be built to a customer out in a rural area and he pays the same as the one that sits right next to it. And that's the argument about what is the fairness and all of that. So we've brought in a token differentiation between rural and urban. Now, in that case, therefore, in rural areas, it becomes very difficult. If there is a business that's in an area which is relatively populated, then we declare that from an Eskom side, and there is a methodology that we work it out in terms of density. That's approved by the national CCDS, which we use, and that then we declare sort of an urban area, then you can get those type of tariffs. But there is a differentiation between that. And I think that links with and maybe answer the chairman's question on that one as well. And that is the big issue that came up from the municipalities, the argument. But the smaller municipalities out in the rural environment, they pay a rural tariff. And we understand, and that's also a medical contract. And that's also one of those areas that we have understood that we're working on it. And right now we're preparing a proposal to take back to the regulator. We've discussed it with the municipalities as well, because that will mean that we pool together all municipal tariffs into one pool. And the only one with differentiation municipal tariffs will now not be the 9 different tariffs to municipalities, but it will be sort of the 3. It's the public lighting, which is the standard one. The other one is then for large municipalities and other small municipalities, and no differentiation between urban and rural. It will mean the large municipalities pay a little bit more, but it's very small. But we are addressing that.
And the next question was the differentiation between city power and Eskom, especially when we fix faults. Well, the instruction to our technicians is that it doesn't matter where the fault happened.
the fault is in a city power area or in an ESCOM area, if our people are the best placed at a particular point in time to fix that fault, they should, as soon as possible, because it is South Africans that are being inconvenienced by the absence of electricity. And in fact, people don't even care whether the fault is from city power or from ESCOM. They just know that they don't have electricity. So our instructions are very clear that we should collaborate and work with city power. And in fact, in everywhere where we operate, that the primary objective is to make sure that people have power as soon as possible. It's almost like the Hippocratic oath of electricity, that because the doctor can't say, it's not my area, you have to attend your patient. So it's the same principle that we apply in maintenance as well as in the fixing of faults. So we are not trying to score points, and that is not our aim. Our aim is just to ensure that when there is a fault, it is fixed as a matter of urgency. I don't know, Mongez, if you can talk about the billing meters and that are not inside, but that are inside, but people get accounts, as well as the what do we do with farmers that refuse to their farm workers to get electricity.
Chairperson, if I can start with the farm workers, with the farmers refusing to supply their farm workers, because the land is owned by the farmer and the houses are owned by the farmer, the contract of supplying is with the farmer. And we're trying to get around that the farm workers can actually get a contract directly with ESCOM, and they can benefit in free basic electricity and so on. However, in certain areas, the farmers refuse because they own the land and the houses, and they want to have the contract with the with ESCOM and then pass it on to the farmer. It's a legislation issue, but it's also a negotiation issue that we deal with it on an ongoing basis.
In fact, Chair, it is a human rights issue.
The other one of the meter being outside and some inside, partly is also historical. ESCOM's preference would actually to have the meter outside the house, because then we can access it. If there's a fault, we can fix it, and it's also more difficult to actually tamper with the meter. But we all know that when we're having the old conventional meters that were turning, most of those were inside the house. As we now install prepayment meters in the house, we only put a passive display that just shows you your credit. But the active part that is controlled by ESCOM, we then secure it outside the house in a secured container. And in future, that's going to be the practice.
Thank you. There have been complaints about municipalities that are graded differently. I don't know, Noj, if you can talk about losses in electricity every year, how much losses we experience.
Every time when we ask that question, I couldn't understand. You are buying electricity. How does it
happen with the inclosure. I think we explained this part so it, I can understand, except texts and that. I want to understand how it happened.
Maybe Mr. Tsogoro can tell you the technicals.
Yeah, because all the time they're telling you about the losses, but then you keep my quiet without saying you don't understand. Because I'm a speaker of the council, how come they are not educated about it? But I can ask the question here for me to understand.
One guess, are you the most senior engineer?
I will check. I will simplify it. Electricity flowing through the wire is like water running in the pipe. The more the flow is, and the smaller the pipe, the more the resistance. That's why that you'll actually sometimes feel that the conductor is hot. That heat is loss of energy, simply put. So every time you transmit and the transformer gets hot, that means there are losses. So both in the power lines and also in the transformer itself, those are called technical losses.
Then we the people is stealing, how do they steal? I mean, you know, but keep quiet without understanding. Now I do understand.
I think we can give him the title of the people's engineer. I think, Chair, that takes care of all the questions that you asked.
Thank you very much. Is there any question of honorable members? Before Honorable Safaku, there was a hint of Honorable Saula and Honorable Smita. They show me small questions. Safaku, one. Yambi one in Labaskahni two. And guys, also it's interesting. Maybe sometimes.
The losses.
Yeah. thank you very much. Welcome to ask the questions on the World Cup.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, let me start by thanking the CEO and explaining that actually I am not a member of this committee. I only come to this committee on a needs basis, and who determines the need? It's me. I do that determination, but I can assure you, Chairperson, every time ESCOM comes to this committee, I will always be here. When other activities are happening, maybe I'll not prioritize them, because I think I've liked listening at the CEO, not much the chairperson of the board. of course, he is my father. We have come a long way. I always like listening to him, but today, I think I like listening at the CEO. I was here in May when the department was here, chairperson, and we have not had a meeting in June, July, early parts of August. And I'm here again. When the department was here, they talked of load shifting. No, they said load shifting. And the CEO is saying we don't have load shedding anymore. The department said, Chairperson, we don't have load shedding, but we have load shifting. That's what the department said. So it's important that there is that synergy between ESCOM and the department. The CEO today is giving us another story, saying, no, those are things of the past. The department is saying, no, we don't have load shedding, but we have got load shifting. I think they are good. Both the department and ESCOM, they are good with this thing of shifting. Because the CEO is saying, when we all are unprepaid, his problems will have been solved, but it's shifting because they'll have been solved for him, but they'll have shifted to somebody else. I've had a scenario like that in the area where I stay, a case that was brought before my brother, where somebody was taking from somebody and ESCOM was not involved. while my wife is working, the same thing has happened. The same thing has happened again, where somebody was taking from the school, and when ESCOM came, they say, "Oh no, no, no," because they are very good in responding. They come on the spot and they say, "Oh no, we can't do anything about this one. The only thing we can do is now legalize the illegal connection." Up to this day, Chairperson, that illegal connection is still illegal. But what did ESCOM say? No, we cannot disconnect. We legalize. It's about more than 5 months ago now. It was somewhere around February. We legalize the illegal connection, but up to this day, the connection is still illegal. Honorable Nyambi was talking earlier on about boardrooms and being out there. You see, oh, we are out there. I can see you're a boardroom person. And we are telling you about what happens out there. The things that are real with our communities. ESCOM has got to sort those things out. Lastly, Chairperson, there is one group executive here who needs to be a friend of all of us. We are public figures. The one who supplies communities. I would like to know who that one is. There are those who collect money. I don't want to be a friend of those. There is this group, CEO Mbovu, who connects people. We need to know who that one is here. Because sometimes there are just very small problems when you send these companies that connect people. This one is connected, this one is left out. That one is connected, this one is left out. And people come to us, they want to know what's happening, and we don't know who to talk to. Now, this group executive who is responsible for connecting people, we'd like to know who that one is, so that maybe we can just liaise with him direct, and he will know who to talk to when there are problems. And lastly, the 90% and 10% chairperson. See, Umzimkhulu is not Eastern Cape, it's KwaZulu-Natal. And it's not only the large part of, northern part of KwaZulu-Natal. I come from Mzumbe. The large part of Mzumbe is not connected. So you and me, we need to sit down and talk. Thank you, Chairperson.
You are not a member here. You must make a point when you prioritize when you come.
Thanks. Partly the question that I wanted to do follow up on, honorable next to me have already touched on this. What's your problem? I know you are Kaula Mundomuhle. No. But what I want to talk to in terms of this shifting that is referring to, you know, now I'm more worried about the infrastructure of ESCOM, the security of your infrastructure. You may deal with the issue of prepaying people, but fact of the matter, people are stealing electricity direct to from your poles or whatever you call it. But now I want to know the plan that you have to secure your infrastructure. You know, I can even go to the extent of saying, even to deal with the personnel of ESCOM. Because in East London, there was also a mention that some of the people that are creating this problem for us next to the airport are the people that are working for ESCOM. So you need that thing. We can talk about it outside here. I'll refer you because I know exactly. So that's what I want to know. Infrastructure protection of ESCOM.
Thank you.
I'm
about
to
confuse
you. Sorry. Thank you very much.
Hello.
Yeah. Okay. 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 Honorable Chair, thank you very much for the manner in which you really answer some of these questions. And assurance also that indeed South Africa has got enough electricity for expansion.
is appreciated. But now the logic of the mining industry paying 14% in the municipalities, 40 to 44, very difficult for me to understand that. To say as a lay person, or mana mogolo wa ko tla khameng wa sa ipiwang sala, how is he going to understand that logic? Maybe lastly, the meter boxes, are they South African manufacturer, or are you ordering them somewhere else? Because indeed you are using the park, will be needing a lot. If they're local, it will assist in terms of also job creations and empowering a lot of our South Africans. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I know that this month was celebrating our heritage. And I don't know where we'll get the opportunity to have ISCOM, because both Honorable Sefako and the CEO are taming you. So I'm going to interpret after this meeting, and you won't have the opportunity for them to clarify you. That was on a lighter note. Chair, I think we... Honorable Labuskagen is correct. Part of what is not part, they've presented what they were supposed to do today, and we've dealt with the details. But the problem of what is happening now, it's, I think also Honorable Kaula is correct. The temptations of failing to plan our own things as a committee to call ISCOM, we can't make it ISCOM's mistake. It's our mistake as a committee, because the temptation now is to get out of what was supposed to be presented to us. And of course, we won't miss the opportunity because we have ISCOM with us. So maybe it's to request you, Chair, that in assisting us moving forward, have it as part of your program, how you want to have them coming or us going to them, so that we're not going to be like you to wait for 2 years to be clarified as the engineer has done today, so that from time to time we understand what they are presenting. I wanted to say that, but the last part is that anything that is coming to us, sometimes it was part of what was discussed today in programming of Parliament, that CEO and Chair, sometimes the... How can I put it without losing the real meaning of it? Even the media will talk of a parliament or a speaker of parliament. Yet in South Africa, we don't have that. We have a speaker of the National Assembly. And if you're talking about these arms of state, if you come to parliament, it is being led by two warm bodies. We've got these two houses that, in terms of your constitution, is parliament. So, I'm coming to what we have in front of us. CEO, if somebody can get this copy and look at it right from the front page, it's not something major, but you have your NCOPS and something else. And Tina, we're an NCOP. We're a National Council of Provinces. So that at all times it's reflecting that it's another house of parliament. That is why when I started, I made that appeal that when you are coming to us, if you are going to cover, like when we're responding to questions, I'm so happy and satisfied how we have dealt with the issue of the challenges of the different provinces and the achievement of different provinces. And the day, Chairperson, we're going to have a presentation or you give us that information, that will show what is happening in these different provinces. A decision has been taken that we want to make PCOs as efficient, effective operation centers of parliament. And all of us here were belonging to different constituent offices. And ISCOM has got foot in all these provinces.
So whatever that is happening in whatever province, you make us to understand what is happening so that we are able to assist and have that information. That was my only appeal. I don't have a question because out of what was presented today, CEO and Chair and your team, you have done justice to respond to those questions. But now it's just that, Honorable Kaula, it's out of our unintended intentions that you are the only one in your very own elephant in this NCOP. So it's belonging to all the committees. So it can't
point
be every time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions, but I think the second question is something that we can ask the ESCOM to come back to us at a later stage. Thank you very much for sharing with us the turnaround and the profits that ESCOM is making, CEO. I would like to know, this 200 million went up to 4 billion in 1 year. That sounds very good. How much of this profit, I assume that this profit is going to be being utilized in various ways back into the ESCOM, but I would like to know if some part of that would go back to erase the debts or the borrowing, and if some part of that will go into either subsidizing or installing prepaid meters in some areas at no cost. Thank you. The second question is, I appreciate that you link the reason for a nuclear investment to secure 2030 to the history of the backlog of the volume program in ESCOM. I would like ESCOM, from your point of view, to give the committee a detailed idea of what is the reason to specifically choose nuclear to ensure electricity sustainability for 2030, while there are a lot of other sources that is most probably cheaper, seen in the light that you today here when we requested what is the sustainability of electricity to generate economic growth in this country. You said to us that is something of the past. We have enough of that for now. And now we are using only Coburg as a nuclear source. And we know that that station is not going to continue forever. But for the years that Coburg has been used as part of the mix, we were still not be able to produce enough because they didn't build early enough. That's my motivation. You can touch on that now if you want to, but I would like Chairperson for the committee to go into the details of this for us to understand. Thank you.
The last one.
Thank you for the answers. I am part of the, as you're saying, CEO, the 90-10%. I'm part of the 10%. My area, which is in Amatola and Bashe, Ward 28, is in that bracket of the 10%. And as much when Olbun Yambi is cheering, sometimes the things I'm sleeping, I'm just making myself use that I must not get used of this area. I'm used of the darkness. So, what I wanted then to say, uh,
So, what I wanted to say is that what the committee would like to know, what they always ask, is where are we getting? And it is then important to know the person to speak to. Recently we had some doors, blocking of roads and all, burning of cars. But if one had the information, who to speak to and say, okay, in 10 years' time, what if it's in 50 years' time when I'm not around, but the electricity will be coming. But what is more worrying is that you'll find that some villages will be passed and electricity will be at a further village, and that creates a very big confusion. So what would then be important is to know who to speak to so that we can keep our communities informed. We know there's been a lot of progress in the country. Previously there were no electricity, you know that we were all that time used to walk in the dark, so there is progress, but the thing is when will they get electricity? Then lastly, just for information purposes, our media colleagues here, we've seen in the media whereby some banks don't want to loan some entities. What is the situation now? And also in the media, we've also picked up that their rating agency are coming. Now, should anything happen or any of the entities and yourself be downgraded, will that be a cost to the public of South Africa? If you can just talk to us about that. We wouldn't like that to happen. I'm not in the group that wants that to happen. I wouldn't like that to happen because I'm a pure South African. But if you can just talk to us about that. Thank you.
I'm just a backdoor engineer. What is load shifting?
Chair, unfortunately, I wasn't part of that departmental presentation.
Okay, let's leave it there.
I mean, at some point in time, we're just going to have problems in terms of our generation and when the peaks occur. So through the time of use tariffs, we also try to move the utilization of electricity from the peak hours, which is early in the morning or between 5 and 7. So we want to move it to outside of the peak hours. So that could be the interpretation of the load shifting, especially in large industrial customers and so on, to utilize in the off-peak hours so that we balance the production.
That is a reasonable explanation. Because what it means is that, for example, you can put KwaZulu-Natal that they should start work at 9 so that they wake up at 7 and not at 6. But when you say the department says what we have now is not load shedding but load shifting. But that load shifting was not happening. This thing that he's talking about were not being implemented. Where was it implemented?
That is why they explained it, because there are questions around. No, we still have areas that will be switched off for 2-3 hours, while somewhere else it's on. So they said, no, it's not load shedding, it's load shifting. That is where it came from.
That was not happening. And switching off areas for 2-3 hours is not load shifting, it's load shedding. We have not done that for over a year. So I don't know what it is that was being discussed in the committee with the department.
Okay.
But we, and the people that are responsible for the entire system are in this room, we have not implemented load shifting. We had problems at the local level with distribution network, especially in winter, but we did not implement load shifting. the collection that needs to be legalized, I would like to get the details so that we can look into the matter and see if we can facilitate that it be fixed. The person who connects people is Mongez in Zobo, the people's engineer. He is the one responsible for distribution, and in fact, while we are at it, you might as well, Mongez, tell us, if you have the information here with you, when Mbashe will be connected, as well as the KwaZulu-Natal portion of Umzimkulu.
And Mbashe.
Chairperson, I will prefer to follow up with the question. Just to explain, as we now move to deep rural areas, there is no infrastructure. So there are no lines and there are no substations. And the lead time that we need for us to face is to make sure we can build the infrastructure that we can connect people. So that's really the phasing, but we can share that information.
But we intend to finish the entire program by 2022. So 2022, we should be able to say there is no village in South Africa that does not have electricity. General, I don't know if you want to comment about measures to improve the security of infrastructure so that it is not accessible and abused.
I think ESCOM has to this extent supported security department. We have received a budget for infrastructure upgrade, which includes surveillance systems, which includes enclosures for our facilities. So we are on track. Our program will be completed in the coming 3 years because ESCOM is also a very huge entity. So we have done it according to phases. We'll start with substations which are linked to the SO, which are national key points, then will devolve to the ones which are less problematic if ever they are going to be vandalized. But the issue which the Honorable referred to of illegal connections being done by ESCOM personnel, we are quite aware of that, and we have already prosecuted some of our own employees. We've got a case recently which was in the Limpopo area where the person who was connecting, though he was not an ESCOM employee, but he was an engineer equivalent to Mongez in that area. he has been sentenced for that offense. So what I'm trying to say is that where we know about cases, we do really make a follow-up to ensure that we kept the sketch. Thanks.
Thank you. And Tase, I don't know if you can talk about the logic of mining industry paying less than municipalities, as well as where the meter boxes come from.
See, I mean, maybe just clarity in terms of those percentages which I quoted. It's the sales volume of municipalities in terms of ESCOM total sales is in the region of 42%. The sales volume to the mining industry is in the region of 14%, and the sales volume to industry is 23%. So it's not the tariffs applicable to those environments. So it's just where the majority of the energy goes from. In terms of the meter boxes, there's currently some parts are imported and others is locally manufactured. In terms of the Treasury requirements now, there's certain percentages in terms of local content that the meter suppliers or the conductor suppliers needs to adhere to, and ESCOM commercial processes takes care of that as well.
Chair, we would like to apologize for the front cover of our presentation and ask the committee to forgive us for any mistake that we have made during the meeting. But I just want to point out that the person responsible for these presentations is Mr. Fredin Doe. Mr.
Sanskrit.
You
just forgot the apostrophe.
The apostrophe.
Over the S.
Yes, but you must forgive him because when he started school, it was under the Department of Bantu Education. And he finished high school under the Department of Education in the Independent Republic of Venda. So I think he should be forgiven. The application of the bottom line profit will largely be into the capital build program. So you can look at it in many ways. So either we reduce debt or we borrow less, but it will be applied in the capital build program because the 4 billion is now in part of our reserves. And yeah, it will be applied in our capital build program, unless I'm not sure if you want to add. Nuclear. We don't have to come back, we can talk about it now. The reason nuclear is preferred is firstly because nuclear is clean. It does not have emissions, and it is preferred over coal for environmental reasons. The second reason is that nuclear is baseload, unlike wind or solar. So nuclear, once you build a nuclear power station and it starts generating electricity, it does not wait for the whims of nature, like sunset or clouds or wind, to be available. The current program, the 2000 installed capacity that cost us 193 billion that we talk about in the media of renewables, has an energy availability factor of 30%. So in fact, we're talking about 700 megawatts and not 2,000 megawatts, because the energy availability factor is very low. This winter, the best performing power station, because we had a competition in Eskom, we said to all the power station managers, we are going to measure which power station had the least breakdowns and supplied the most power reliably right through winter. And this was a competition to make sure that our power station managers perform at their best. The power station that won this winter challenge was Kubeng. Why? Because it was available right through winter. In fact, Kubeng has recently just broken a record of being available for non-stop 470 days, which is a new record actually. And so it is reliable, it is base load, always available, it has a very high energy availability factor, and it just ensures that we have electricity irrespective of the weather conditions, or the strength of the wind, or the clouds. And those are the reasons why we say that, in fact, nuclear should be preferred over coal, even, because it does not have emissions. The other options are gas, but gas functions very well, maybe as baseload, but maybe as peaking power plants, and hydroelectricity. But those are usually also peaking power plants and not baseload. So in 2028-2030, we need to have finished, we need to augment our baseload. So we don't need it now. At the moment, we have a surplus. So people say, if you have a surplus now, why do you need nuclear? We don't need it for next year. We don't need it for the year after next. We don't even need it for 2022. We need it for 2028-2030. But to do that, we have to start now. five or six years of building nuclear power station must go into just planning. Just planning before we start hitting the ground. And another 5 years into implementation. We must not repeat the mistakes that we did with Kusile and Midubi, where we start building when the plans are not complete. So we need to do it thoroughly and properly. But we need to get buy-in and accept that this is a plan for the future. It is way beyond, for example, my own career will have ended by then. So I don't understand how I'm going to be corrupt if we start planning now. But we will need it 2028, 2030. We will need additional base load then.
Thank you very much, CEO. Is there any other, the last, the very last, if not?
No, it's not a question, but just an input. What is the issue of the farm workers and farm dwellers? I think if you are working together with the Department of Land Reform and Rural Development, there are two pieces of legislative framework, the Labour Tenant Act and the extension of security of tenant, which if well implemented and also being some an enforcement, I think the farm workers will be able to have access to electricity and the water. I think that's the input that I was just making. This committee is also serving on the Committee of Land and Mineral Resources, which of course can also escalate the matter to that department. Here is the problem which need some collaborative effort so that we can deal with the matter. Because indeed, the people that are the farm dwellers, their conditions are appalling. Talking of the rural area where such other elements are, all these are being available. They are the ones that are still, where we can still experience backwardness, which was done deliberately. I agree with you that indeed this is a human rights. They must enjoy all these rights as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. For that, we are going to close out. Now, I just want to say very much.